Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 151 for April 22nd, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
Here's where we wait for Joe.
Nicely done.
Here's where we wait for... I am not Joe Steinkamp.
No.
You're not.
Which, by the way, what's he doing? Is he playing hooky this week or what's he up to? I don't know.
I don't know. They shoved me in this chair over here and
I think he's gone and joined a group of Apple fanboys and is actually hosting a party. That would be my guess.
That could be interesting.
I will have to hear live recording from that to believe it, I will say. Yes. because we got to talk about Facebook this week. We're going to talk about Twitter. We're going to talk all the stuff he loves to talk about, and he's going to miss it all.
He's going to miss it all. And there's actually fairly little in the way of Apple news this week, which
lends credence to my my theory. He knew there wasn't going to be enough Apple, so.
And he took the week off.
We'll make a party for fanboys.
All right.
And girls.
Very good. So let's talk about Twitter, shall we? What's this music service thing that they're launching this week?
Have launched. You can get the app now. I've heard various reports. I've heard that it's accessible, but I've also heard that it's crap. So
okay. Well, the jury's still out on that.
I don't mean crap as far as accessibility. Oh. I mean just. It's not very compelling.
Yeah.
But I have not tried it myself. Therefore, I have no opinion.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't either. And so hesitate to jump in and say anything about it, except apparently a Twitter developer did write on the AppleVis forums asking how the service could be made more accessible if it wasn't. So very nicely done for them reaching out to the community and asking about that. Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to see more and more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, for a long time, it was us reaching out to the developers. And one sort of interesting thing is that in general, the smaller developers were quite a lot more eager to do accessibility than people with big companies and deep pockets. Apparently, you know, you try to reach out to companies with lots of developers and deep pockets and rarely hear anything back or you hear, you know, the usual canned thing and then nothing happens. That's starting to change too. So it's really nice to see that we're not doing all the reaching anymore and that people are actually coming to us and asking.
So it's not on the show notes today, but Mudrammer was looking at, and that's the same thing. I believe the developer of that app has reached out to AppleVis as well and said, hey, and apparently that's something I haven't played with, but... there have been some accessibility improvements there.
Is that a monster truck app or something?
It is a Mud client, apparently.
It's one of them there games.
One of them there games.
That we used to play back in the 90s, back in the early 90s
exactly.
Over Telnet.
Yeah, right. Apparently they are
text. Lots of fun. Yeah. Wasted many an hour.
Indeed.
Murder Innkeeper.
With what?
The innkeeper staggers. The innkeeper staggers from your mighty slash.
Good times.
You are mortally wounded and will die soon if not aided.
So, Ricky, yes. I believe that Twitter isn't the only company launching or talking about launching things this week. What's Time Warner up to?
Well, amazingly, they're doing something right. Can't say I'm a big Time Warner fan, but they are kind of the only choice for cable in my area. And looks like they're going to bring live TV and some on-demand stuff to initially iOS, and then it's going to come to Android. So they have had this before, but you had to be inside your house to do this. So I guess like you could watch something on the iPad in the kitchen or whatever if you didn't have a TV in there. But if you were away from your house, you couldn't do this. Now they're making it such that you can. They're starting out with 7 channels. There's BBC America. There is the TV Guide channel, which I have no idea what that shows. And there's also PAC or PAC-12, and I'm clueless about what that is as well. But again, they're starting off with
probably sports.
7 of these. And yeah, I bet you're right. It probably is sports. And then they're going to have lots of on-demand stuff as well. So, hey, nicely done, guys.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed because we had Time Warner, and then they sold to Windjammer, who apparently was either sold or was bought by Zito Media. Have any of you ever heard? Either of you ever heard of Zito Media?
No. Of course, I also have not heard of Windjammer except for Barefoot Cruises. So
yeah, well, that's kind of what I thought. Actually, I'm afraid we're a little low on the cable food chain these days. Can't even get UVerse. Dang it. In this area, because I would like to play with that app.
But can you get Dish Network?
I can. We had it. I was thinking there was some accessibility issues with their app. Is that
there
correct?
There are tons of accessibility issues. And yeah. In fact, their iPhone app, which used to be pretty sort of accessible, now the program guide is completely useless as far as accessibility. And it makes me very angry. I will probably be leaving Dish Network here when my contract is up. Although, hey, here's another story that has some interesting speculation, and that's really about all it is. It's interesting how stories can be made on nothing more than speculation, but apparently Dish has submitted an unsolicited bid to buy Sprint. It would be Sprint Wireless, which is kind of interesting because just a few months ago, SoftBank, which is a strange name for a mobile phone company, but that's what it's called. SoftBank is a mobile phone company in Japan, a mobile phone provider in Japan, also wanted to buy a large interest in Sprint, if not the whole thing. So this article is speculating about how Sprint and Dish together could offer some interesting bundles, and goes on about how really you shouldn't worry about price, you should really worry about content offerings, and you know, if Sprint and Dish are merged, then Sprint could have more spectrum to do more things with high-speed data, and I'm not really sure about that, but whatever. There's absolutely nothing concrete or solid in this story. Nothing.
Nope.
No,
nothing at
they
all.
Were just like, I think we'll, what would happen if we did this?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Hey, look, there's a bid, which absolutely nothing was done on, but let's speculate about how things could happen if Sprint decides to go for it.
Oh, well, I guess it'll all come out in the wash, right, Jamie?
Oh, indeed it shall. As a matter of fact, the really cool thing about that is you might not even have to use water if you wash your clothes.
I'm really intrigued by this. How can you really get anything clean without, you know, water?
Well, LG seems to think you can. As a matter of fact, they actually kind of half-jokingly called it a clothing management cabinet, this first one that they really debuted. It uses steam. Apparently, it kind of...
Because steam isn't made with any water at all, right?
No, not at all. Apparently, it doesn't really get your clothes all that clean, but you can put stuff in it that makes them smell good.
Yeah, I really want one of those.
Yeah.
when half a bottle of cologne just isn't enough, throw your clothes in this and
the clothes
make it
management
smell better.
Cabinet.
Yes.
Yeah, I really want one of those. Yeah.
Well, all this aside, I think it's neat that they're working on it because dry cleaning doesn't really use water either. And what
it's
they're
also
working
not
on
dry.
No, it is not right. dry, in fact. No. It uses other liquids and such. And this that they're working on, the clothing management system was like the first version of it. And now they're working on something that is not waterless. So like you have some water, but then it has these bizarre
polymer beads. But they don't know. They don't know.
There's something right. that
yeah,
do right. stuff.
Well, they're saying that they don't know if it's going to use any water or if it's going to use some kind of dry cleaning thing. Because like LG's not talking.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're speculating some more.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
This is the week for speculation. This is the speculation cast. Yes, indeed. This is the week to not say indeed for the rest of the podcast. If I do, I have to pay, I don't know, somebody a quarter every time I say it or something.
We need to have the, it's not the swear jar, it's put the it in indeed the, jar.
Yeah.
Yeah, put the quarter in the waterless washing machine there.
And, oh, there you go.
Right.
But what I'm wondering really, though, is can you control the waterless washing machine with your NFC-equipped Android phone?
Yeah, you might be able to. And the Samsung Galaxy S4 does have NFC in it. And it's also coming to carriers later in April. And actually, this is not speculation. It looks like T-Mobile.
No, this one's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is our first real concrete information of the entire podcast right here, folks.
Amazing. Actually, second. Aren't you glad you stuck second, around second. For all that?
Correct.
Second, yeah, because we had the Twitter thing, and that's real.
Yeah.
That is
except
real.
That we don't know anything about it.
No.
Well, we saw it on Twitter, so it must be real, but, you know, we haven't tried it. This is coming to T-Mobile first in late April.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
You know what I really think
I
is interesting
AT&T
about that?
AT&T would get it first.
Yeah, the thing that I think is really interesting about, well, actually, I've noticed this a lot. It seems like T-Mobile's getting a lot of the Android phones first, which is really interesting because, like, T-Mobile's the smallest carrier. They have the smallest cellular footprint in the U.S. I mean, like, it's getting better, but there are still places where there is no T-Mobile coverage. It's got the smallest subscriber count, but they get the Android phones first.
Yeah, I wonder what is behind that, and I hesitate to even speculate because we've probably done enough of that for one podcast, but it is very interesting. And this particular phone does have a 5-inch screen, and I don't know whether to call it a phablet or not. It probably does fall into that category.
I'm still waiting for the return of the bag phone. I'm just saying.
That'd be awesome. And we've talked about this before. First, the phones were getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and then we got to a certain size where the phones would just be tiny, and now everybody's all about, oh, make it big. It's got to be big. I need a big old screen.
You got to have a big screen. Big screen that I can't manipulate with one hand anymore.
Correct.
And doesn't
see, that's
fit in my
okay,
pocket.
So this is where, you know, people are beating up on Apple because all they went from a 3.5 to a 4-inch screen and they're making a huge deal about it. It's only a 4-inch screen. How come it's not a 4.3 or a 4.7 or even a 5? Because all these other phones have big screens. Yeah, except that, you know, Apple basically said, you know, we want people to be able to actually operate the thing with one hand, with their thumb, if they want to. And that seems to be important to some people. So, yeah, there's that. So speaking of big panes in the glass, we have a story here talking about a new file manager for Windows 8.1, which is going to be the update to Windows that's coming sometime this summer, they say. I'm a little worried about this.
Yeah, I would be concerned as well.
Yeah, I'm actually a lot worried about this.
This has been leaked somewhere, and it's downloadable via torrent, I guess. And so some of this speculation actually has some merit, I suppose, although everything could change by the next version of this that comes out.
Yeah, because they keep saying that there might be a start button, but there's not one yet.
Right. And everybody is speculating that the start button will return, or you can boot right to desktop, not a start screen, and some other stuff. But
I'm not seeing either of those things happening. I mean, Microsoft went in this direction. I don't see them backpedaling. This particular speculation really reminds me of, I told you no Apple news, except I lied. This particular speculation reminds me of all the people that are saying that Apple's going to come out with a cheaper iPhone and they really want, you know, the only way that they're going to get more market share is to make a cheaper iPhone and blah, blah. It's like Apple doesn't work like that. And I don't think Microsoft works like that either, as far as, you know, when they go in a direction, I don't think they necessarily backtrack. I mean, like they might if there's enough screaming and hollering about it, but they seem kind of committed to this whole like Windows 8 design.
Well, it would appear that Windows 8 has not been the amazing, roaring success that Microsoft would have liked. But there's hope that Intel might give a little bit more life to Windows 8 with some $200 to $300 notebooks. I don't know. I don't have a a strong opinion one way or the other, honestly. It could happen.
Yeah, I can see them doing this. I don't necessarily know that it's going to kickstart anything. I think everybody is floundering because so many people think the PC is dead. The PC is dead. And even though it could still have a valid place, if enough people say that the PC is dead, then it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So even if Microsoft does come out with these $200 or $300, whatever you want to call them, I guess it's not an ultrabook or a netbook, it's a something book. But if they come out with these, that doesn't mean that people are going to buy them. What they're hoping for is that most consumers don't care so much about looking at specs on a PC. What they care about is portability and price. And so they're hoping, well, if we do something, people are going to buy it.
See, this is history repeating itself, I think, because, okay, look, well, first of all, one article I saw said, you know, called all of this, everybody needs to make stuff cheaper, everything's going to be cheaper, race to the bottom. And I think that's a pretty apt description. But this sounds like netbooks all over again. Oh, nobody cares about specs. They want something portable that they can get on the internet with. And netbooks were all the rage for about a year. And then they started slowing down and people started caring about those specs again.
So, yes.
So there's that.
Yeah.
This kind of sounds a little desperate, really, doesn't it?
That was the word that came to my mind.
Yeah, honestly. I would agree.
Yeah.
And what about Chromebooks? Do you think the fact that Chromebooks haven't really taken off is because of something similar? You know, people don't want a PC-type device. There was a survey done, and it looks like Chromebooks were taking up, what is it, 0.02%?
Yeah.
Why didn't they call it 0.01%? But in any case, it's not a whole lot of percents.
And in other news, water is wet.
Yeah. Chromebooks have just not taken off, and I don't know if that's because people are more interested in tablets or if it's because Chrome OS is something that people really don't know a whole lot about and they're not ready to invest in this kind of, here's your PC connected to all your Google stuff and use that for everything.
Okay, so here's sort of my opinion on this, and I'm actually testing a Chromebook for accessibility. I got in their tester program that was advertised a little while ago. But I gotta say, maybe they'll recall me after I say this, I don't know. But I gotta say that, I don't know, I'm not really convinced that Chrome OS or anything like it is the way forward here. And I think a big part of the problem is that people still want control of their stuff. I, for one, don't feel comfortable entrusting my data and my music and my media files and my personal documents entirely to some big corporation that could do goodness knows what with it, or at their whim, or for whatever reason, you know, maybe someday they'll shut down or they'll decide I've violated some obscure terms of service and then I won't have access to my stuff anymore. Sure, I want to have access to my stuff anywhere, and I don't have a problem with putting stuff up that I need access to in other places up on the internet, and I refuse to use that other word.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is that being the sole means by which I have access to that, and I think that that's a real concern for a lot of people making that leap. Putting aside for a minute that, you know, this is how we did computing in the 1970s, where everything is stored somewhere else and you accessed it with a terminal. All these are glorified terminals that look better and have nicer pictures. I think there's some of that. And, you know, you put that into a laptop form factor, people think computer. Put it on a tablet, it looks different, it feels different, and so people don't think of it the same way. I think that's a really good point.
That's mm-hmm. a very good point, because you're right. People use their tablets, whether it's iOS or Android or Surface, Surface is kind of a weird hybrid in my mind, but tablets are different than PCs. At least I think of if this is in a laptop form factor, then that means it's got something inside where I can save stuff to it.
And to be fair, you can save some stuff on the Chromebook. There's a small solid state drive in them. Still, the majority of what you do is going to be connected. And again, you're still entrusting everything that you do to Google. And whether you trust Google or not today isn't really the point.
So are you in a position to say anything about accessibility right now at all? Or is that all of that pretty much under NDA?
I don't really think that there's so much NDA. I mean, everything's out there. It's, you know, Chrome is open source and the Chromium OS is basically the same thing with proprietary bits removed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty accessible. There are some strange holes in it. There are some usability things. There are some philosophical things that I have a problem with. For example, nowhere obvious in the manual does it tell you how to turn accessibility on. Accessibility information is all under advanced settings. So like if you're getting your Chromebook and you look at setting it up, it tells you how to set it up if you're sighted. It has absolutely nothing in it as far as if you need spoken feedback, press Ctrl-Alt-Z, click here for more information on that. Nothing. Wow. So in that respect, accessibility still feels bolted on and an afterthought and not a priority and not an integral part of the experience. And right. I have a real problem with that. Also, there were some comments that visual disabilities are handled here, but there's nothing really for learning disabilities or hearing disabilities or any other sorts of things, and there needs to be more for that, physical disabilities and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a nice start. It's a good start, but there's lots to do still.
Well, I think they were very, very smart in starting this program where they provide Chromebooks and get feedback from people who might actually use these things.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that was not only very intelligent, but really very necessary. And I'm glad they did it. I'm glad, and they got a really wide cross section of testers. I mean, they got all kinds of people with all kinds of experience levels. So they did a good job with that, no doubt.
Well, we certainly know in the blind community that Apple has definitely has a head start on, say, Google, the Android operating system, as far as accessibility, although things are improving and rapidly, it would appear. But what does the rest of the world think? Who's ahead? Who's winning, Apple or Android? This is an interesting article.
It's an interesting article, and the answer to it really is exactly what I expected the answer to it to be, which is it depends on what your definition of winning is, and it depends on what numbers you look at, and it depends on
how you care to read those numbers.
Yeah. And how the researchers got those numbers. Mark Twain said that there are three kinds of lies. There are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics. And really, you can read a lot of these numbers any way you want. As far as units sold and so forth, well, you know, Android trounces iOS because all of the Android phones have this huge percentage and iOS has this. But bear in mind, Apple is one company, whereas the Android phone makers are several. If you're looking at Samsung, again, those numbers aren't really very, very apples to apples, I guess, just because they compare all of Samsung's phones to iPhone. And there again, one phone versus lots of phones that are not all smartphones. They're flip phones and feature phones and all those other kinds of things. So the numbers don't really tell the whole story. And again, it depends on what your definition of winning is. So
yeah, and apparently Apple's making
so the
lots
answer
more
really
money
is yes.
Because,
right, Apple's making tons of money.
That right there,
yeah,
yes.
Apple's making lots of money, and there may be a whole lot of Android phones, but they sell like at cost in some cases.
Right, the cell phone companies are providing them and planning to make the money up elsewhere, and phone manufacturers sell so many different phones that the margins on one phone aren't going to matter so much. And, you know, again, they're not Apple, and Apple has basically always catered to a higher-end consumer anyway that's willing to pay that premium. So there's that, too. Again, and then the web surfing, you know, predominantly Apple. App downloads, predominantly Apple.
Now, although, that kind of intrigues me a little bit, yeah.
Well, and Android's actually downloading lots and lots of apps, but Apple's making all the money.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think the downloads of apps are pretty equal, and the numbers of apps available are pretty equal, but
right.
Apple's making a lot of money, and then they compared ratings of apps for Apple and Android, and it seems like people on Android were more meh about their apps than Apple people were, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know, I'm wondering if some of that has to do with the consistency of UI. Mm.
That's certainly a possibility. Some people really like the ability to have the unexpected when it comes to UI, and some prefer to have some level of consistency across the whole experience. I don't know. But, you know, I don't think there are nearly enough phones in the market right now. Maybe Microsoft ought to jump in here and make a phone.
They say uh-uh.
You think? They say no. they definitely say uh-uh. Well, it's kind of interesting because Microsoft used to not do hardware at all, and now of course they do the Xbox, and they've done the Zune, and now we've got Microsoft stores, you got your Surface and all that. So they're starting to really change what they do, but that they're not willing to get in to create a phone themselves. I don't guess I'm really surprised by that.
No, me either. I mean, there's so much going on right now in the smartphone market that, I mean, why would they want to?
Well, they can't, there's not really anything that they can do to distinguish themselves, I don't think.
Right. Kind of let the other players battle it out and see how that all transpires, I guess.
Coming up after the break, more Google, more security, your letters, and much more on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 151, and at long last, it's time to talk about Facebook again. Well,
all right.
Finally, I couldn't hardly wait.
I know, everybody, we were all squirming in our chairs.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this article is definitely a link bait article, because it's like...
Oh, yeah.
It has one line about Facebook, and the other 20-something are about... lots and lots of other things that have absolutely nothing to do with Facebook, or for that matter, much of anything at all to do with really any of the other lines in the story. it's like somebody went in, they like had this conversation with Eric Schmidt, they took notes, and then they like just dumped their notes onto the internet. That's what it looks like.
Basically what it looks like, and the title of the article is Facebook Home, it really took some guts to do it. On our part. So, you know, you'd think this whole article is going to be all about how Google feels about
Facebook. Or at least a significant portion of it.
Some of it.
Right.
But that was essentially the only line where they talk about Facebook. Facebook.
Which was taken out of the story pretty much verbatim and put in as the title.
Yeah.
That was really cute. Nicely done journalism intern, but you've got some growth to do there. The
clearly
the article though is, I mean, it's kind of an interesting discussion with Eric Schmidt, although I don't know how much of this I actually believe. They cover how, well, Eric Schmidt says, you know, there's supposedly all this tension between Google and Samsung, but really,
Samsung.
No, we're all
friends. Not really. No, we're friends.
We're
everything's like good.
We're buds.
And he talks about Facebook Home, and you know, well, it took a lot of guts for us to do this, but actually we're really not worried about it because this is open source and this is the kind of thing that we want to see.
Right, and we want to see people take things in a different direction. We like that, but it took a lot of guts.
Yes, it did.
So,
so there's some contradictions.
Yeah. So I'd really have liked several of these points could have really been fleshed out a lot into their own articles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would have been really interesting, but...
The point about voice recognition for Google Glass being a light bulb moment for him. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to read a whole article about Google Glass, and he makes another reference to it saying Well, I forget exactly how it went, but they were talking about, you know, how do you feel about Google Glass, and is it going to be the norm at some point where everybody is,
it is a Google.
Wearing it? And it is a Google, he says. All right, then. I want to know more about
I wonder
that.
If TV Raman is wearing it.
I'm not certain.
You guys do that so well.
Before Android was on smartphones, it was actually destined for something else, I guess.
Cameras, who would have thought?
Yeah.
Although, of course, the camera is like, I mean, a smartphone is a phone, is a camera with a phone added, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's why they stepped away from this.
I guess, but it's you know, because then the phones became the thing, the place to put your apps, which all a lot of have things to do with your camera anyway. And of course, now the most popular digital cameras are
Like your smartphones. Phone. Yeah, yeah.
Your smartphone. Yeah. Yes,
right.
Which is really kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be weird to have a camera with apps. It's believable, but now that we see phones with apps and you know,
that happen to have
cameras being a part of that, yeah.
In some parallel reality,
people use phones as phones and cameras as cameras.
Right, with apps.
Right.
So an iOS app for your digital camera that is separate from your smartphone. Okay.
Yeah, right. You'd have a two separate devices, one of which you talked on, and the
or
other.
Or I guess
which
you're Android. I'm with. Such an iOS guy. I didn't even put the correct connection there, but yeah, that works. So as per usual, we had another service go down this week that we've come to know and expect good service from, and that would be Google this time. Gmail and Google Docs and what else? I can't even remember.
One more reason why trusting all of your data to the internet is probably not a great idea.
I actually didn't seem to notice this one. I must have been sleeping through this mostly or something. I don't know.
I mean, even if the outage was, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, you know, if you really needed that document in that 5 or 10 minutes, boy, howdy, you were in trouble.
You were in trouble. That's what I was thinking. What if you were about to go into a presentation or something and you had this stored on Google Drive or whatever? That would have been bad, but I remember this kind of Twitter explosion as this happened, and people were saying, I've never seen Gmail go down. I've never seen Gmail go down.
Right.
And then,
never?
Say, 30 never? Minutes yeah. later, it was back.
Yeah, I guess I should say I was reading the tweets. I just personally didn't experience an interruption in service that I was aware of. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I must have just not checked my Gmail account at that point in time.
Precise
or something. Right.
Well, if you're using WordPress, you want to be careful because there are botnets out to get you. Apparently.
Yes.
Yes.
They're brute forcing passwords.
Right. And they're specifically targeting the admin username, apparently. And so if you have a weak admin password, you better be careful about that. And if you're on an older version of WordPress, you better upgrade because there are plenty of vulnerabilities in older versions. And this one, I don't think it's actually been closed. So they're telling people, don't use the default admin username for the things that you do on your WordPress site.
I need to fix that.
Change that. Yeah.
I need to do that. But the question in my mind right now is, if your automated self-driving car gets attacked by a botnet, should blind people be able to drive it?
Well, that's a good question. I'd say botnets attack this week, self-driving cars, that would be not a good thing regardless.
That would be a really bad thing.
Whether you're blind or sighted.
So many systems, even without being self-driving, so many systems on a car are now controlled by a computer. I mean, like if your electrical system in your car goes, like your car goes, it doesn't go.
Yeah. Well, your car stops.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, and you can't, even though your engine doesn't run, you know, it still runs on gasoline, it has to have, you know, all the systems online to start it and monitor it and make the anti-lock brakes break and do all those things. If none of that works, you're stuck. So, yeah, botnet, bad. But, you know, I got to tell you, this article really surprised me.
Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, it did. Because, well, okay, Earlier in the week, I read another one that was fairly critical, and it was blind guy at the was it at the RNIB or somewhere was saying, no, blind people shouldn't be allowed to drive, and you know, because what if something happens, so on and so forth, and he didn't seem much in favor of it, and there were legitimate concerns, of course, in that respect. You know, if we were going to bring the technology out today, sure, and he brought up a very valid point that, you know, the technology is certainly going to outstrip the legislation. We're going to have self-driving cars before we have the ability to license blind drivers to operate them way before, because that always happens. Technology always outstrips the legal framework, always. But this article was surprisingly positive towards the idea.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I thought that was very cool.
And I'm correct, right, that this was a mainstream article. This was not.
This was a mainstream article.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, there was one commenter that said, sure, why not? Blind people can buy guns, so why not? Like, I'm not sure exactly if there was sarcasm meant there, if it was a veiled gun control thing, or if
right.
it was... I'm not really sure, but I'll take it on face value. Sure, why not? If the technology is... Okay, so especially if the technology is good enough that it works, and then if it fails, something like the blind driver challenge car that the NFB is working on could kick in, so you could pull yourself over to the side of the road and call for
help.
That's
how I've always envisioned this. I want to see both these technologies be able to
absolutely.
Work together.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Definitely.
And I think that that's ultimately what we'll have to see. I think that in real terms, I think that the autonomous car is going to come out before fully formed and usable before either A, the blind drivable car comes out, and B, before any legislation and legal framework and insurance proceedings and so forth come out to address that. Again, the technology is going to outstrip other stuff. But I do think that there needs to be the ability for human backup, because technology will fail. And I absolutely think that, you know, we should have something where if the technology fails, that something like a non-visual interface could kick in.
I hadn't really thought of it until I was looking at this article. The concept of a car driving itself to the shop for some routine maintenance, I thought that was pretty interesting.
I hadn't thought of that either. I think that's great.
I do too.
I'm broken. I'm going to go get fixed.
No, and then even better, like it calls the shop while it's on its way, and so then the service robot comes out
and
plugs itself in and does the software diagnostic and... Yeah, so this could
I want to hear the chatter back and forth between them. Hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm all right. Just right, right.
It's the beginning of the robot uprising.
Yep.
It all started here.
Yep, that's right. And you can hear it, the foretelling of it on EOL.
Yes, you can.
In the blind show. Sorry, yeah, absolutely. Well, in the meantime, while your car is off getting itself repaired, you can sit around the house and just play with apps if you'd like. And one place to find some really good accessible apps for your iPhone is AppleViz. And they've actually just simply provided a resource link here for a list of apps that have been added recently. Well, actually, not so recently in some cases. And of course, Serotech's own iBlink Radio is on that list, as well it should be, along with a whole bunch of other stuff that kind of escapes my mind at the moment. But it's a great resource.
There were a bunch of color ID apps, and I've tried some, but I'm still on a quest for the perfect one, so I need to get these as well. And this is not, I mean, these are developed, it's got Access Note and, of course, iBlink Radio and others that seem to have specific application for the blind. There's the LookTel Money Reader and that kind of thing. If you're looking for games and that kind of thing, AppleViz is great for that, but you're not going to find all that on this list.
Right. This is, as you point out, specifically developed for the visually impaired. Good point. Well, buddy, what about Braille? Let's talk about Braille this week.
Braille. You know, Braille's great, and I love it, and I think there ain't enough of it, and I think that literacy is important, as anybody who's followed me with any regularity knows. I'm definitely a Braille proponent. and can't say enough about how I think the system has failed a lot of our blind kids in that respect. But having said all that, there are lots of places where Braille just is not appropriate. Is not appropriate. 10 feet over your head being one of them.
Right.
Don't touch this hot glass.
Don't
see the sign. Right. It's right there.
It's right there.
And really print.
Right there. Don't touch the. Don't. Yeah.
Print Braille dots. And, honestly. And
print Braille dots. Yeah. Really.
This apparently happened in a bunch of these. There's an article here that is
a whole ton of them. Yeah.
Covers Braille fails, and there are, I mean, what, 8 of them where the dots were not tactile.
Not tactile, or if they were, they were like on a big old billboard 10 feet above your head.
Yeah, you can't read that.
But the sign on the hot glass that says, don't touch the hot glass, was my favorite.
That's my favorite too, yep.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are the signs that say, Braille menus available upon request.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
If I knew where to find that sign, I might have asked.
Exactly.
And then there was the Braille no parking sign, which was kind of
neat. I missed that one.
Yeah.
Actually the Braille menus thing, I don't think was on the article, but I've seen them or have had people tell me that they were there before.
People are always making fun of the Braille on ATMs. Now that actually on drive-through ATMs.
Yeah, people make fun of that, but I got to tell you, I've had to walk up to my share of drive-up ATMs.
Right.
Not only that, but if they're producing these things en masse without thought to where they're going to be placed, well, why not have it on everything?
There's that as well. And of course, if you're in a cab or something, you lean out the passenger window. Done that too. But yeah, it makes a whole lot more sense to have Braille on everything if you're producing one mold and one control panel than to, this is a drive-up one. We don't need it. Don't need it. Don't need it on that one. Get the print panel with no Braille on it. We don't need it.
Well, it costs twice as much to make two of these. Don't care. We don't need that Braille over there.
That might be a moot point if, we have the autonomous vehicles and the blind drivable vehicles that, then we can use the drive-up ATMs as God intended, right?
Yes. And then what are comedians going to do when this happens? Won't somebody please think of the comedians? How are they going to joke about this stuff then?
Indeed.
On that note, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with the mailbag and your most secret thoughts revealed right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit energysavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 151. It's time to break open that mailbag and kind of dig around in there. Ricky, what are you finding?
Yeah, look, there's the mailbag robot right there.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, the mailbag robot.
What a good concept.
Wow, I'm going to be obsolete soon. Man,
well, no, you can just use your mind for
the mailbag robot
though.
Has to drop the mailbag there, right?
Right.
Oh, okay, but it doesn't get to do the sorting.
It doesn't.
Yet.
No.
Okay.
Okay.
No, that functionality has not been included yet.
Okay.
Awesome.
Good.
Well, then I will reach in and grab something here, and let's see. How about this one? This is an iReport from Robert Dittman.
Hey, don't drop that.
Some very interesting stuff. Well, yeah, it's kind of heavy, actually.
Yeah.
So let's throw that on there.
Hi, guys. This is Robert Dittman, and no bar results as of yet, but I'll let you know when. I wanted to leave a comment about blind people getting hit by trucks and cars and things. First off, Joe, let me apologize. That was totally not a cool thing that woman said. You know, my husband's a lawyer and here's his card. Actually, no, that will get you in big trouble in Texas. You can't do that. But anyway, Mary-Kate and I are about to get married. So my wife got struck by lightning and it was on August the 4th. And she was driving down I-10 here in Texas between mile marker 595 and 597. And she got hit and lightning struck the vehicle. And you talked about blind people kind of having that snapshot moment. And basically, yeah, she went from 75 miles an hour to everything in the car shutting down at once. And she coasted to a stop and she called me and she said, you know, what do you do? And she didn't panic. It was just kind of a remote control thing. And now we're dealing with the insurance company. The thing about Mary-Kate is she's fine, by the way. There's no lasting damage. The point to the whole iReport is that when bad things happen, don't panic. And it happens to more people than you think. So fall back on your training, your O&M skills, and that's why that stuff is so important. Fall back on your training, and that's what's going to keep you safe when you're out there in the middle of the fleet. Guys, take care, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
So, yeah, being struck by lightning while in a car. I don't know why, but that's always been a big fear of mine. And I never thought it was particularly likely that it would happen, but I've always
seems highly unlikely to me, especially going at that speed.
Mm.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine exactly how this happened. It's like, wow, what a statistical probability, but there you go. But I've always been concerned about that, being in some enclosed thing that has metal and it gets struck. And then, like, how do you know? Well, is there still current? Or, you know, let's say a power line drops on it or you get struck by lightning. In which case, you know, how do you know if you're safe? Can I open the door or not?
My mom has an interesting, if that's the right word, lightning story. She was washing dishes at the kitchen sink. I'm not sure where else she would wash dishes.
Most people use the kitchen sink.
Yeah, that's right. No, she was at the kitchen sink washing dishes and a big old lightning strike hit outside the window. And she said she found herself about 3 or 4 feet back from the sink. And the next day her chest was really, really sore. So I don't know if she actually physically got struck by lightning or if maybe the pressure wave from the strike, but I would have thought surely she would have had to have been hit to have been knocked back from the sink. I don't know. But
man, that's wild.
It is. And of course, being her, she didn't go to the doctor or anything like that, you know.
The whole takeaway from this lightning deal is surge protectors and all that, it's all great, but lightning doesn't care.
No, no.
Nope. They'll strike anywhere at any time. And next up, we've got an email from Peter Dodge in Miami. And he says, great Saratok podcast 150. When you all started talking about encounters with cars, my palms started to sweat. I have RP, and as my vision continues to decline, I have a harder and harder time crossing some of the streets in Miami. Fortunately, so far, I've only had close encounters of the first kind. I did have a bike accident in 1982, and if someone else had not called 911, I would have croaked from a head injury. Wow, not cool.
No.
I also would have bit the dust if my sister hadn't ignored my request to just lie down and instead dragged me to the ER. I think a very important point is that any injury should be checked out, no matter how thick you think your skull is.
Point well taken, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I've only ever been hit by a car once. Actually, I was kind of tapped by a car, run into by a car. One time, it didn't even knock me over. It was like I was in a parking lot, and there was a car idling, and I stopped, and I waited, did all the right things. I walked up to the car. Walked up to the driver's side window. I remember very vividly this. Walked past the driver's side window towards the back of the car, and right about the middle of the back of the car, she threw it in reverse. And it only got about a foot before it hit my leg. And I went back up, and she's, oh my gosh, are you okay? Are you? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. No, yeah, I'm fine. Just which way is the bus stop? And so then she argues with the person in the car with her about who's going to get out and point me at the bus stop. She got out, pointed me at the bus stop. I went the direction she pointed me, and it was wrong. So
that's just great. But why did she back up if you were headed toward the back of the car? You'd think she would have been like super paranoid and looking behind her and is going to go now.
You would think, but apparently she didn't see me out her window or out the back window. Of course, seeing me out the back window would mean she'd probably have had to have been looking out the back window.
How could she not see you out her window, though? Because
she's probably talking to her buddy.
She
probably had her head turned and was talking to her pal there in the. So in all respects, she was completely negligent.
Yeah,
that's the only thing.
And didn't even really
want
to get out and help you with after that.
Didn't even want to get out.
And didn't do such a good job of it when she did. So
no, not so much. Yeah, I was not impressed at all.
Well, we are impressed with your responses to our podcast, and we urge you to please send us some email, resources@sarahtalk.com, because we really enjoy hearing from you. Also, leave an iReport on your iPhone or your Android device. Go to sarahtalk.com and check out the show notes. Leave a comment while you're over there on the blog. If you go to iTunes to subscribe to our podcast, be sure and rate us, and feel free to write a review while you're on iTunes as well. It's time now for Roundabout. What if researchers could pinpoint secret thoughts that you had and maybe not actually flash them up on a screen, but at least kind of recognize the patterns in your brain waves? Apparently that is very much possible. And
the
so
future is now.
It is indeed. Oh. Uh-oh, a quarter.
Uh-oh.
Oops, I got to pay somebody.
Yeah, and Buddy did it earlier, too. So we got 50 cents in the Indeed jar. I don't know what we're going to fund with this, but...
I don't either. But apparently, passwords are something that might be involved here. Right? Rather than... Obviously, you're going to have headphones that can measure brainwaves, do EEGs real quickly. But instead of passwords, you could just think a really pleasant thought. Now, my question is, why is that any better than a password? Because how do you know which pleasant thought you were thinking about?
Well, this article says that everybody's brain waves are different, so it doesn't necessarily even matter what you think. It's just that it measures your you know, your specific brain waves. So I guess they think your brain waves are kind of like fingerprints, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I think they initially tested when you were thinking of a secret thought, and then I guess they figured out that, well, you know, even if you're thinking about something else, your brainwaves are still unique. What I'm wondering about is what happens when people have their minds altered by substances, because this does happen. And hey, this might be a good idea. You drink too much and now you can't post on Twitter because you can't log in. It doesn't recognize your password.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, this would be very good for a number of people to have.
No more Foursquare check-ins from bars. Just saying.
That's right. But it'd be difficult to hack that, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, you need a blow and go to start your phone.
Indeed. Absolutely. Let's see here.
Is that 12 and a half cents?
Yeah.
Well, in much more serious news, we want to talk a bit about the Boston Marathons, and in particular, there were blind runners involved in the marathons. We have a couple of articles.
There were several.
And in fact, I think I saw a count on Twitter that there were 47 visually impaired runners. Yeah. And they actually had a tent set up for this team, I suppose, of runners. And 46, 47 of them. This first article talks about a gentleman who was guiding a blind runner, and they had just crossed the finish line and were 300 feet away from that when they first heard the explosions. And, you know, his reaction was, the crowd is about to get very unruly, whatever's going on, so let's try and distance ourselves from that while we can.
And that's something that would, be really important, because once I guess pandemonium, if that's the right word, breaks out, Yeah, you're going to be, it's pretty much everyone for themselves at some point. Although it's my understanding that it was a lot more organized than it might have been, because there were a lot of EMTs there who were going to treat people for what they thought were routine.
Heat exhaustion, dehydration, things like that.
So they were on scene, which is, you know, a great thing.
What really struck me was that this dude didn't panic. I mean, like, you know, some people would have panicked and run off and, you know, here's this blind guy.
Yeah, some people would have said, okay, blind guy, you're on your own. I'm out. No, he didn't do that. They both
I love stories like this, really. Yeah, they both safely. I love stories like this, though, because they really show sometimes, you know, in tragedy, they really show that really the best in human beings too. Yeah, sometimes we really do rise to that occasion and meet tragedy with something positive.
Yeah, I think so often we do hear the horrific side of things and not as much as we should about people really stepping up, and, you know, they're ordinary people who find it in themselves to be brave or perform some act of heroism or just be kind in the midst of tragedy.
And that's really the most important thing, in my opinion, really, is that people just so often and without any recognition really just stop to be kind.
I had to smile because there's at one point the gentleman says, the guide says, when you're with a blind person, police will let you do things. I'm assuming that meant probably a little bit of preferential treatment, maybe kind of got him out of the crowd a little more quickly.
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah.
So I guess that was an advantage in that instance. We did mention the ability to donate blood and other things to the Red Cross for the Boston victims. Also want to point out that for those of you who are near Waco, there was the fertilizer plant explosion, and so there's certainly a need for assistance there as well if you're able to contribute.
Our second article, we'll just go ahead and link to in show notes. A man from Texas had a very similar experience.
Another man from Texas, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, he was
blind tech
running
and Texans
with the host of an NPR quiz show, Peter Siegel. And
how cool is that? That is
pretty cool. Yeah.
It was like his dream, I suppose. You know, this guy was so thrilled. His name was William Greer. And he was like, I thought that it might have totally killed my time because Peter Siegel was going to make me laugh so hard through the whole thing.
And it's actually S-A-G-A-L. I'm not sure how to pronounce
it's,
that.
Yeah,
now that
Sagal.
There we go.
Sorry.
Sagal, thank
okay.
you. No, that's my fault. But yeah, no, I think you just said it, buddy. They actually thought it was maybe some sort of a celebratory cannon. They were apparently far enough away that the first explosion, it wasn't real obvious that something was wrong. And then obviously the second one happened and they knew.
Like, you know, when you win the Wait, Don't Tell Me quiz show, most people get Carl Castle's voice on their answering machine. But, you know, this guy gets to run with Peter Sagal. So, I mean, he really won the jackpot there. How cool is that?
As Ricky says, this is a difficult time for our country, and we definitely encourage people to keep everyone in their thoughts and prayers if you are so inclined to do that sort of thing. And feel free to donate to the Red Cross and other organizations that might need some assistance. So go ahead and check out the show notes, read the articles, and we'll go ahead and put that Red Cross donation link in the show notes again, as we did last week. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the podcast. I'd like to thank Buddy for getting to play Joe this week on the podcast. And
didn't do a very good job of it, I'm afraid.
Oh, you did fine.
Glad to have been able to sit in.
Well, you know. Joe's a hard act to follow, man. I don't know what else to say.
He is.
And I believe next week, Lisa may be playing the part of Ricky on a podcast.
Yes, she will.
I have heard this.
Good. It's funny. Every time Lisa comes on, it seems that there is at least one Wordsmith article, possibly two. And I always get to miss out on those. Or I won't say get to miss out, but perhaps am forced to. So we'll see what happens next week.
I'll have to find a Wordsmith article just for you, Ricky, at some point.
That's right.
Again, keep those cards and letters coming. Send those iReports. We love to hear from you. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll